This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Monday in America. You know what that means, everybody. Well, it's Monday no matter where you are, isn't it? In some places, it might be Tuesday.
Yeah, could be Tuesday or Sunday.
Depends on what time.
Could be if you're in Hong Kong right now, I suppose. Anyway, here's what we do. We salute our members of the military who kept us safe all weekend. So raise the glass, everyone, because on behalf of the men and women at Navy Federal Credit Union and the men and women making podcasts in Mom's Basement, here's to our troops. Thank you so much for all that you do for us. Let's go stack some Benjamins together.
Mine's tequila.
OG's already into the gin and tonic first thing on Monday morning.
Really? 5:30 a.m. OG, and you're already doing gin?
My can definitely doesn't say IPA. It definitely doesn't say that.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and how do you invest for success? Well, if you're not sure of your approach, you don't have to wait any longer because today, Joe and OG share their top five building blocks to building a successful portfolio. In our headlines, what do you do when there's a huge financial setback in your life? We'll share strategies. For our TikTok minute, how does your physical activity enter into your financial plan? I'll bet you a dozen cream-filled donuts you don't know. Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to a lucky stacker, and I'll be sure to share some amazing and always brilliant trivia. And now, two guys who aren't often called amazing or brilliant, at least in their choice of dad genes, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
I don't know, OG, I think you're looking pretty hot in those dad jeans.
Dad jeans?
This is called Dad Lulus to you. Thank you very much.
You bedazzled them, too. I like that.
It did. Well, you just do it down the side.
Spend some time on them. Hey, everybody.
Rhinestones.
Welcome to the Artsy Financial Podcast. I'm Joe Saul Sehy, Average Joe Money, on Twitter, on X, on that platform. Glad you're here with us for another Stacky Benjamin Show. And OG, happy, happy day, my friend.
Happy, happy day to you as well, amigo.
Absolutely. Okay. We got a great show today because we're doing a top five, Doug. Top five.
And not everybody loves them.
Not the top five donuts that we're going to be eating.
Bear claws, maybe apple more fritters,
donuts,
French crullers,
no
cider, standard cider house like cake donuts.
Boston cream cake donuts suck.
Boston cream suck.
Oh, Boston cream is so good.
Now I got to come up with a fifth.
It's little twist ones.
Yeah, that'll work.
There's also, hold on. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Oh, Doug, those should be outlawed in like 5 different countries. Don't say that type of donut again.
All right. Okay. So I won't talk about that one anymore. But what about here? This one right here?
Well, you know what I think about Navy Federal? I think about the veterans that have done so much for our country. And I also think about some of our active service members. Want to say a special shout out to my nephews, Colin and Nathan, who are both in the Navy. Colin is stationed outside Seattle, Washington, on a submarine. And my nephew, Nathan, is in South Africa as an air traffic controller. And in Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants you also to celebrate members, many of whom go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. It's all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their family are eligible for Navy Federal membership. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all of their Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Oh, that's so disgusting. Really? How does it even qualify as filling, OG? It shouldn't even be. That's not a filling.
Jelly.
That's a little shrimp puree never hurt inside a donut.
Top fish donuts. Yuck. It works for tacos. Why not? All right. We got a top 5 coming up, but first a big headline. So let's go.
Don't get me started on fish tacos.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show. Our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today comes to us from MarketWatch. And maybe a little evergreen one here, written by our friend Kimberly Palmer. Kimberly's been on the podcast before. How to recover from a big financial shock. OG, this is something we don't talk about much, is that, you know, Kimberly writes that there might be a couple times in your life when you have a huge
financial shocker.
When you have a huge financial. When all of a sudden you go, whoa, hey.
Can that be the subheading for our show title? Like Stacking Benjamins, the financial shocker. That's got to go on the new logo.
Oh, gee, there's a couple times in your life, according to Kimberly, she said, looking at a bunch of statistics, nearly all of us, once, twice in our life, where all of a sudden there's just a big amount of money due all at one time, and you're really not sure how to get over it. So she talks about, you know what, best time to prepare for that is right now. Probably a good opportunity for us to talk about it here on the show. So what's our first step to making sure we get ready for that big financial shock that might come?
Well, I think the first thing is recognizing that it actually can. You know, you talk about whatever insurance or risk or whatever, it's always the other guy. I'm a safe driver. I never get in accidents. It's like, I will never slip and fall down the staircase, or my water heater never breaks. You know, it's like it does sometimes. And you have to accept the fact that stuff, with a little asterisk, you know, stuff happens, right?
Absolutely. And this is where the emergency fund comes in. I know that we've gotten pushback in the past, OG, about emergency funds, because for several years there, cash didn't pay anything. I mean, you sit there looking at a cash account back, you know, a couple of years ago, and you're earning 0.5%. And okay, now if you're in the top 1%, if you go look at depositaccounts.com, you'll see maybe you're getting 5% now. But still, people say, well, that's beatable if I just put money in stocks. But really, this emergency fund can't be in the stock market.
Well, no. I mean, the reason that you are allowed to have so much money in stocks is because you have an emergency fund. You know, obviously, there's been lots of times over the last 20 years, 50 years, 100 years where the market's gone down. And it's Murphy's Law. You're going to have an issue. You're going to have a financial need at the same time that the market's down 20%. So you don't want to have your emergency money locked up in stock returns. Or another popular one is, well, I've got a credit card.
Right.
And they sometimes like to turn those things off if things are getting a little snug, if the economy is changing a little bit. Banks have been known to call those lines and say, yeah, we're not going to do those anymore.
I was going to ask you about that, though. You know, a home equity line of credit, most banks have a fee to keep that open every year, even if you don't use it. Do you keep that open just as a second tier OG, just in case for that, you know, that big black swan event?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, for sure. You there's nothing wrong with having it, but recognize that there's a beginning and an end to that contract. The bank may say, hey, the draw period is for the next 10 years. The payback period is 10 years. You know, you have it open for 9.5 years, and then the 10th year shows up and they go, we don't want to renew that. Or you didn't use it, so we're going to close it. It's not an always there type of situation.
I think it's interesting with interest rates now paying more. You said this on a show back in the fall, that there's a lot of people out there with money sitting in cash, and they have not paid attention to the fact that interest rates are higher on cash, and maybe we should.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that most people have a lot of excess cash laying around in their savings accounts and in their checking accounts because basically the last 20 years, it hasn't been an issue. You haven't had to think about cash. It really didn't matter that much. You were talking about 1% or 0.8% or something like that. And now, you know, we're seeing hundreds of thousands of dollars as we talk to people every day about their emergency fund. And it's like, we've got all this cash as a society sitting at Bank of America getting 0.4 when you can be getting 4 or 5 or whatever. Yeah. If you just take a little action.
Check out current rates. We're obviously recording this earlier than you're hearing it. So check out what they are now, but definitely higher than the 0.5% we're looking at before. CDs for a long time, OG, have not been in vogue. CDs back? Should people be looking at CDs for their emergency fund?
Well, I mean, from a cash standpoint, if you are trying to get a better return, sure. But I like the idea of laddering CDs a little bit more where, you know, if you're going to buy a year-long CD for $10,000, why not say $2,500 every quarter for the next year so that you've got a rolling $2,500 coming available to you in 3-month increments, you know, from that point forward. I think it's a little safer from a liquidity standpoint than locking money up for a year or two or three.
When you get to the point, let's say that you haven't built that yet, Kimberly talks about some other options. She talks about first, obviously, cut back on unnecessary expenses. You know, you can't change your rent easily. One person says that she quotes here, but you can adjust how much you spend on going out to eat, travel, entertainment, clothes. You're obviously going to do that. But the second area is interesting. For some of your bills, you can ask if there's a hardship option. We saw this a lot back in 2007, 2008, right? Before people struggling to make the mortgage, people struggling with losing their job during that horrible time. The hardship option, I think, is one people forget about, especially after a time of good stuff happening like we've had in the past.
Not only that, but also the flexibility that people want to work with you. There's a lot of stress around money conversations of any kind. I was just changing our TV programming, you know, kind of going through and doing the audit of all the stuff that we have. And we have a service that we don't need anymore. And so I called to cancel it. Of course, you got to go through the phone tree and then you got to go through the salesperson that's trying to keep you. That's their job. We were paying $180 a month and their offer was $40 a month.
Oh my goodness.
To stay, you know, that's for a year and then we go back and da 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 da. But that also applies to all the other things in your life. I mean, you probably can't get cheaper electricity, but you can get a better cell phone plan. You can negotiate interest rates on your credit cards. If you've got consumer debt and you haven't called the bank and said, hey, is there something we can do about this? You know, like 30% is just too much. I'm struggling. They want to work with you. They don't want to write this off. They'll knock it down to 20% maybe, or 15, or give you a 6-month window or something to kind of move ahead. So you just have to ask for what you want to have happen, and you'd be surprised at what's really out there.
Kimberly also addressed creating a timeline and finding support, people sharing your goal with friends and family members so they know that you're trying to reduce spending. They're empathetic. They're not like, what happened to you? Why'd you fall off? And that takes some guts. But I love the place she ends. Don't forget mental recovery. It may be helpful to focus on the mental health side. Remind people going through a financial shock, things are going to get better. He says, just a temporary hiccup. I remember when I was really felt like I was screwed for money. I just kept reminding myself, this is temporary. I'm gonna make it through it. We will link to this on our newsletter, the 201, stackybenjamins.com/201. Always free, always out with links and more on this topic the day after our show. Time for the TikTok Minute. This is the part of the show where we dive into something a TikTok creator made, either brilliant, you know, like some TikToks, or air quotes brilliant, which is the rest of them. And OG, let's turn to you today. You think this can be brilliant?
Super brilliant.
Well, let's...
Absolutely.
How about that? How often does he say that, Doug? Who
Never.
Is this?
That's my line, dude.
Who are you? This is an interview with a gentleman talking about longevity and some interesting findings on longevity. Let's listen.
People think they have to go pump iron or run triathlons or do, you know, break a sweat. But actually, walking gives you about 90% of the physical activity value of training for a marathon. And Ken told me, and he's on top of all this data, that if you're 80 years old and you can walk a mile in under 17 minutes, it adds about 6 years to your life expectancy overnight. So just the act of walking. Now, I could ask you, Jay, or any of your audience to, you know, get out there and get your exercise. But if I can just create your city, so it's easy to get your coffee shop, your kid's school, to work. Bye. You're going to get that walking that's going to get you 90% of the physical activity you need.
That's Dan Buettner, who there's a Netflix special about blue zones, people living long amounts of time. He's talking to Jay Shetty there. But the reason I thought this was important, guys, is because, you know, we often think, especially in the financial area, we got to do all these phenomenal things. We got to do all this great stuff. And oh, gee, walking enough gets you 90% of the way. Just all you got to do is just walk some steps. I mean, how often have we talked about that when it comes to financial planning?
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say, is that the corollary here to money is that it's not all of the little intricate things. It's save money into your 401k, save money into your brokerage account, save money into your 529. And it almost even doesn't matter how much you do. It's the fact that you do it and that you never actually stop doing it.
Doug?
I mean, before you guys got all serious, I was going to say, I think I'm going to live forever because I walk all the time.
No, you're going to live 90% of forever, according to Dan Buettner.
I mean, it still counts, right? I'm walking. I just had probably 2,000 calories of beer and onion rings. I'm walking.
Walking back and forth to the fridge.
It might help you get partway back. I really like that. And the other thing too, OG, I mean, how many people, especially in our community, focus on the financial part, but we also forget that if you're not healthy, who cares? I mean, you really, the money's to support a lifestyle. And if you can't keep up the lifestyle, I think it's a 1-2 punch.
Or you're paying medical bills. So you still need to do all of OG's stuff so that you can pay the medical bills because even if you're not living very long, those bills at the end, your last 3 to 5 years, there's a few commas in there.
It's a lot of money. Great stuff. We'll also link to the TikTok minute and Dan Buettner, just a brilliant guy. The Kenny talked about, by the way, in there, Ken Dykewald, who, oh, gee, when you and I were at American Express, Ken Dykewald partnered with us for a lot of those longevity studies. Mm-hmm. Some interesting stuff on longevity, aging, the emotional process, and physical, of course. All right, coming up next, OG and I are going to walk you through the 5 pieces we think it takes, the 5 building blocks of creating a good plan to put together an investment portfolio. He's got his, I got mine. We haven't seen each other's, so we'll see what's on OG's list. He'll see what's on mine. You'll get both of them. But before that, you're getting some trivia from my mom's neighbor, Doug.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And you know, who needs spring cleaning when you can just keep up with it all year long? Doesn't matter what month it is. Stay in front of it. I always say, I also say, don't make stinky bubbles in the bathtub, but it's just too much fun to stop. So, I mean, who knows? Today, let's give you a question I thought of as I was sorting change out of my pockets before putting them in the washing machine. The pants, not the change. Jeez, I'm not a money launderer. Here goes. Who was the first woman to appear on U.S. currency? I'll be back with the answer just as soon as I go look it up. I mean, you know, verify what I probably already knew.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Well, don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment's the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money's breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money in the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Hey there, Stackers. I'm Unnecessary Coin Collector and Coinstar Hater. I mean, those fees, am I right? Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Today, I asked you a question that I totally knew the answer to ahead of time. I knew it. Not like those Jeopardy hosts who just read what's in front of them. We'd never stoop that low. Preparation is everything, I always say. So here's the question. Who was the first woman to appear on U.S. currency? Turns out, the first woman appeared on a $1 silver certificate in 1886 and 1891, as well as on the back of the $1 silver certificate in 1896. So who was it? If you said Martha Washington, you'd be correct!
Doug, it's Martha. Martha Washington.
No, it says it's right here in the script. It says Martha.
Sorry, dude. The script's wrong. I accidentally put D in there.
Yeah, you apologize. Because I just got done telling people we're better than this.
Okay, so, well, I am so, so sorry. It's the mother of our country, who I think we all know, Martha Washington, who appeared on currency first. I'm very sorry. Whoa,
hold on. She was the mother of our country too? Wow, you learn something every day. Holy cow.
Oh, gee, what was it he was saying about doing research?
I wasn't listening.
Look, this is how it's a new thing for me. I'm practicing just-in-time learning. It's like lean manufacturing. Go look it up. Do some research.
Oh, God, yourself. Just finish the trivia.
Okay. All right. The answer, Martha Washington, apparently the mother of this fine country. It is this country we're talking about, right? We're not talking about Canada?
No, this one.
Okay, cool. Got it. And now, with their top five factors to help you build a better investment portfolio, it's back to Joe and OG.
OG, it's been a long time since we've talked about this thing called an investment policy statement. This is a document that people make to avoid just betting on the market, right? To avoid reacting when things happen, either ups, downs, sideways in the market, news comes out, and you go, how should I react? And whenever anybody asks OG how they should react, OG always answers the same thing, which is...
great investors don't react, they act.
And there it is. We've got our top five. Now, normally we take these kind of David Letterman-ish OG, but I got to tell you, I have problems with that this week because I think there's kind of an order of operations here, right? I do this first, I do this second, I do this third, I do this fourth, I do this fifth. So I'm going to do mine that way. Did you have any stipulations or things on yours for your building blocks to creating a investment portfolio?
No. I probably didn't do the assignment correctly then if yours is that way.
Which I think Doug, he says every time. For those of you playing at home, you just got to scratch off the bingo card with the one that says, I didn't do it correctly.
And you already got, I wasn't listening.
Right.
You got that a minute ago. So card's filling up.
We are rolling today. Doug getting the trivia wrong. Man, you probably got three in a row right there. Here we go. Thank God we weren't talking hockey nets. All right, we're going to call it number five. For me, it's the top of my funnel.
Number five.
What's your number five, OG?
So I don't have any of these in any particular order. I thought about it like what's included in an investment strategy. And you had said investment policy statement also. And so I just kind of thought big, broad brush strokes of like, how do you create your investment strategy? And I think the first thing is you want to set it up focused with two things, discipline and accountability. If you can make sure that the same thing is happening all the time and that no matter what happens, you are, in this case, as it relates to investments, contributing the same amount of money, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter what's going on in the universe, no matter what's going on in the economy, and you have a process for checking in to make sure that you're doing what you said you're going to do, whether that's a third-party provider that's providing that accountability or your partner or a colleague or a family member or something like that, making sure that you're doing what you say you're going to do over a long period of time. And then somebody checking your math basically going, hey, are you doing what you say you're going to do? Like a run-in buddy, right?
Yeah.
You need somebody to go, hey, did you do your mile today? Oh, no, I'm really tired. Go get it done. I'll wait right here while you knock it out. You know what I mean?
What I like about the second half of that, though, the automation piece is that rather than think about what am I buying today? Oh, gee, you think, I think broader, which is the problem is never the market, right? The don't get me wrong. Sometimes the market is a problem, but long term, it's not the market that blows up. It's you that blows up. You end up being the problem in your financial plan. And I think the more you make things automatic, the more you have that buddy who's telling you to leave your hands off it, the more you're thinking about creating a machine. And creating a machine is the best way to invest, not what do I feel like is hot today. What I feel like is hot today, horrible way to invest. Create a machine is a great way to invest.
Yeah, and the accountability doesn't have to be a person either. It can be that tool, that automation of your 401k as an auto increase thing, and you set it up to increase 1% every 6 months.
Yeah,
you know, boom, set it and forget it. Do it for the next 40 years. You'll be a gozillionaire.
We did last fall. We did last fall an episode, remember, with Len Penzo. Len said when he first started his 401k. Stretch.
He's on the show. He participates, I think is a more accurate. Contributes feels a little heavy.
Implies value.
Yeah, I know.
But regardless of the semantics around Len's participation in this podcast, is Len talking about how initially he didn't think he could afford to put as much money as he wanted to in his 401k. So what did he do? Every time he got a raise, he automatically raised it, right? And that's the kind of system I think that you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Top of my funnel, which I suppose we could call my number five, I think any portfolio you put together needs to begin with what return do I actually need? Because I think where what we often start with is what's hot, what'll give me the highest return. And when we go chasing returns, we're much more likely to look into something, a phenomenon I always think of is what's hot right now. And what's hot right now is the thing that you're buying high that you're going to sell in a panic when it goes lower. We don't want to invest that way. We want to look over the period of time until we need the money. And over that time period, different investments have done different things. As an example, if you've got long, long, long periods of time, small company value-oriented stocks, an ETF in that area, going to be super volatile, OG. But 20 years from now, historically, always been volatile, way, way, way higher than it is now. You get a 10-year period, maybe we're looking at large company stocks. You got you need the money in 3 or 4 years. Maybe we need to be looking at, cash. I'll get into more of that later. But I think if you start with what's my target, right? What is successful investing versus not successful investing? And you set that parameter, that's going to be the top of your funnel. It's going to drive the next four things I talk about.
Number four.
Next up on my funnel then is, okay, what I was referring to earlier, what investments have historically done that? And OG, that's often going to be not just one or two. A mix of different investments has gotten you there. And frankly, we get very scientific about it. And being more scientific can pay dividends if you're more of a sophisticated investor. But initially, when you're starting out, you know, the thing I like about somebody like J.L. Collins, for somebody who's a beginning investor, the simple path to wealth is just realizing that you focus on stocks. Hey, I got 15 years until I need my money or longer. Just focus on stocks. I can buy one fund. And then that one fund, just put money into that. Once you get a little more money under your belt, when Nick Majuli was on the show, he talked about you really start getting more scientific when your daily ups and downs mean more than that daily money you're putting into it, right? At that point, then you start looking at more complex asset allocation. But number two is when I'm setting up my investments, what types have done that historically? And that's what we're going to focus on. The good news there too, OG, then I'm also probably looking at indexes versus individual investments, because individual, like if I'm buying Apple stock, who knows what that's going to do next year? I don't know. But if I'm buying an index and Apple stock doesn't do very well, well, I might have 500, 600, 700, 800 other stocks in there that do well. And I'm pretty buoyed. So I'm going to go toward indexes versus toward an individual position. And then number two, it's also going to narrow the field of things I'm looking at. So I don't freak out. I think people freak out because there's so many different investments out there. If I only focus on things that have done the return that I need, then I'm much more likely to not experience that freak out factor. That's my, I guess, number four.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about in terms of the benefit of knowing the number that I need to achieve eliminates 80% of my choices.
It's beautiful.
And so it's like, I don't have to think about any of these things. I'm down to, you know, this top 20, so to speak.
And Doug, by the way, you might be asking, because you've kind of pressed us on this before. Well, where do I look, right? Where do I look for? So let's say I need 8%. Where do I look for that?
Yeah.
You can go ahead and look at everything. And as you come across investments, that's just your first weed out. You're like, oh, has this historically done 8%? Give me 10 years. Has it done 8%? Yes, no. If it's a yes, then it goes in the basket. If it's no. So look wherever you've been looking before. Look anywhere. Look all over the place. Listen to podcasts, watch videos. But now you have a criteria that is the, I don't know, the strainer, the colander, the filter that you use to go, okay, I'm going to pay attention more to this, or I'm throwing that out. I don't need it.
Yeah. And any one of those major brokerage companies are going to have countless tools available to you to search, whether you're going to Vanguard, whether you're going to BlackRock, whether you're searching on Fidelity or Schwab. Like, they have a screener for that, and you can put that stuff in.
Yeah.
My number four is that your investment plan has to be dollar denominated. And what I mean by that is, you were talking about your percentage. Hey, what sort of percent do I need to have my goal? I'm thinking about, what the heck are you trying to get to? You know, the pursuit of more is not necessarily a great goal. You know, you're never going to get to that horizon if you just go, I don't know, I just got to save money until somebody tells me to stop, or I die, or I retire. It's like, well, how do you know if you've got to where you want to go? You have to have some dollars associated with what your goal is going to look like. And this doesn't, again, have to be super complicated. It can just be, how much money do I need to spend every year? Add inflation to it until I retire. And then divide that out to figure out how much of a lump sum you need at that retirement time, at the financial independence time, to get an idea of what you're trying to get. Are you trying to get to $1 million? You're trying to get to $3 million? Trying to get to $100,000 for your kid's college, or $300,000 for your kid's college? What you're trying to get to is also going to matter in terms of how you invest that.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what you're aiming at, like, I don't know, this ambiguous number, then you're not going to choose great investments. You're not going to have the discipline and the accountability necessarily to get to where you're going, because you're just wandering around in the forest with no aim whatsoever. No path, no, I don't know. There's so many analogies here.
You're lost.
You're like a ship without a rudder.
Like a ship.
Or a sail. A
ship without wings. You're like a...
Like a bird without a tail.
Without an anchor. A bird without an anchor.
You think this is getting more entertaining the longer you go?
I'm glad, OG, you said that. What's the number you're shooting for? Because, you know, where I started that funnel was on what return you need. Of course, I skipped that first one, which is, once you know what number you're going for, and then you know how much money you can put toward that goal, that's going to tell you what type of risk you need to take, right? What type of return you need to get. Because there's only three factors in this equation. Super easy. The amount of money you need times the return equals that goal amount you're shooting for. That's it. It's not that. And then you can play with those levers later. You can see, okay, if I lower the amount of money I have, or if I don't have enough money, then I can raise the rate of return, or I can lower the goal. Or if I'm hitting it, I can make the goal bigger, right? I can play with just those three things and get where I want to go.
Number three.
So I think after you know what you're trying to get to, I think the next piece of this whole kind of investment plan is to decide whether or not it's founded in reality. A lot of times we get frustrated with our investment performance. I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and they said, yeah, you know, I just don't feel like it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And I said, okay, well, what's your money supposed to be doing? I don't know. It's like, well, guess what? You're always going to feel frustrated if you don't know what the expectations are. You know, like you said at the very beginning, if you know what your investment return is going to look like, or what it's supposed to look like, now you can start putting some time frames on that in terms of, where should the hurdles be, or where should the benchmarks be as I move through this process over the next 10, 15, 20 years, or whatever the time frame is. I think a lot of people feel like they're too late in the game and there's no hope. Well, I believe that you have more time than you think you do in terms of the power of compounding and the power of market growth. But by the same token, if you're starting from scratch and you're 45 and you have no money saved, the likelihood of you being financially independent at 46 is pretty low. And you're setting yourself up for some disappointment to try to hit that when it's just really not possible. You know, so make sure your goal, or you know, what you're trying to achieve, is founded in, you know, somewhat reality. And if it's not realistic, let's talk about what would be realistic. I think that's an important piece of an investment plan.
It's funny that you have this reality check as your number three, because my number three is also a reality check in a little different way.
Well, there you go.
once you look at these investments that will get the return that you need, you have to stand back and go, do I have the risk tolerance to invest in these things? Am I going to have, you know, we talk about small companies will get you where you want to go. You've said this a bajillion times, OG. There's a roller coaster there. It's hard to stay on. That is a hard, hard roller coaster to ride. So you have to know yourself to know, am I going to stay on there? Now, there's tools to look at that. One, if you go to a place called Morningstar, it's free. You can look up the fund you're thinking about, and we'll give you a measure called standard deviation. Now, it's more complicated than the way I'm going to explain it, so uber nerds, don't come at me, but just very broadly, if the standard deviation is 15, let's say, and the median return they expect is 8, that means there's 15 up and 15 down in a normal market. It is more complex than that, but just very gently, I think it's a great way to think about it. So, you know, where people are high-fiving themselves when they're getting a 23% rate of return, when it comes to standard deviation, 23% is a normal year. You know, you shouldn't be high-fiving yourself. This is what it's supposed to do. However, in years when you're sweating bullets because you're at -3, that's also part of a standard return for that. So knowing what that up and down bounce is going to be with your investments, do I have the risk tolerance, is a huge thing. And by the way, OG, the reason I wanted to really bring this up is this. A lot of the time when you invest in your 401k at work, the first effing thing they show you is what? A risk tolerance chart. And they're like, invest according to your risk tolerance. Very first thing.
Results not typical. You may lose money.
Who cares what your risk tolerance is if you have no idea what you're shooting for? That's why it's #3 on my list. It's halfway down the funnel. Because at first we have to set the mark. I could very safely be getting nothing done with my investments. I could be very safely missing out on everything. But once I know what I got to do, that changes the game. Then I go, okay, well, this is what it's going to take for me to retire. I'm going to hang in there. So that's why it's my #3. Do not start off your 401k investing with what's my risk tolerance.
Number two
thing I think we got to put in there is what happens if there's one of those black swan events? If
Christmas is canceled.
Well, yeah, that's Santa doesn't show
again.
Up. Only at the OG household. How many years have you gotten away with that in a row?
It's been quite a while. It's great. It's
that's a money-saving tip right there.
Exactly. Kids, let me talk to you about black swans.
Look, kids, I just got the memo. I don't make the rules. I'm sorry.
It's not me. Don't be pissed at me. You're pissed at Santa Claus.
It's them.
Doug did it.
Yes. And by the way, if any kids are listening to this, this could happen at your house too. So don't be laughing. This is Santa sometimes.
That's just our little gift to you, parents.
Santa sometimes has cutbacks. But we do have to ask, you know, I mean, during the time of 9/11, the pandemic, you look at these things that happen that come out of nowhere. And what are you going to, you need to build that into, I think, your investment policy statement. What am I going to do? Because the last thing you want is what happened to me as an advisor around 9/11. Tons of people wondering, what are we going to do? Ask me, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And you know what, OG, to the point that I was making outward phone calls telling people, hey, here's what I think your strategy should be. This is it. And by the way, guess what the strategy was? Do nothing. But I think you got to have the black swan written into your IPS or into your strategy. So what do I do if a black swan occurs? That's my #2.
Yeah, we call that lifeboat drills.
Oh, good.
Just, hey, life is great. Everything's good. What happens if you wake up and your statement's -20%? You wake up and your statement's -30%. Your statement's -40%. I think that most people, back to that expectations thing from before we were talking about a minute ago, most people get frustrated because they don't know what to expect, both good or bad. And if you say, well, you know, like to your point about standard deviation, hey, it's totally normal to bounce between -7 and +20. Like that would be a normal year. We're not going to, you know, da, 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 da. Like that sets the stage for, well, what's an extraordinary year, both on the downside and on the upside? What would warrant a conversation about this? Because we're just kind of middling along between -7 and +20. There's nothing to talk about here. It's when it's -22 or -28 that you go, whoa, you know, now we're out there in those fringe events. Yeah, I like that one. Mine is kind of somewhat related to this as well for #2, which is a process for making decisions. And again, I think that most of the time when it comes to investments, we make decisions based on like which way the wind's blowing. And you look at your workplace plan or Money Magazine or the news or whatever, like, well, what sells? Well, what sells is the hot thing, you know, and that's really the sexy thing to talk about on CNBC, or it's a sexy thing to write about in the news or post on Twitter. There's a lot of research to suggest that the performance of the outperformers tends to be significantly underperformers in the future. So just kind of put that in the back of your head. But more specifically, when things aren't going your way, how are you going to make decisions? And the way that you decide how to make decisions is not when you're like in the firefight. You have to think about that in advance. Ergo, it should go in your investment policy statement of how are we going to review this and how are we going to determine whether or not we're on track? And you determine whether or not you're on track based on whether or not you're on track for your goals. There's a lot of times we talk to people and we talk to them on the show. They're like, oh, you know, my investment account's only up 9% for this year. It's like, okay. That sounds like a declarative statement to me. Right. You really mean that to be a question. Let me guess what your question is. We're playing the game, mind reader. You know, well, the question is that good? And the answer to is that good is, who knows if you, to your point, Joe, about, you know, what are you trying to do? If your plan calls for 9.5 and you get 9 all the way to retirement, you are screwed. You are screwed. You're never going to have enough money. If your plan calls for 7.5 and you're banging 9 and you work an extra 5 years because you didn't know you're there, you're also screwed. So you have to have the measurement sticks for like, how are we going to determine whether or not we're being successful? And then also, when are we going to make decisions? And my philosophy, and I think a lot of great investors' philosophy is this: if your goals haven't changed, it's very unlikely that your portfolio should change. You change your goals, you go, hey, I was retiring at 65, now I'm going to retire at 57. Okay, goals change, maybe portfolio changes, right? I was going to send my kid to college, pay for all of it, now I'm going to pay for half of it. Goals change, maybe your portfolio changes. But I don't know that I would be radically changing my portfolio or setting up a process for thinking about radically changing my portfolio because this person gets elected president.
Right.
Or yeah, this person raises rates or lowers rates, or, you know, they found water on Mars or whatever.
This is, by the way, different advice too than 15 years ago when you largely had mutual fund managers, because mutual fund managers, OG, would get hot, they would get not. And you would have mutual fund managers change, right? They get a new, the fund wouldn't change, but the fund manager would change and we'd have to switch out because there was a new manager and we didn't know what they did. Yeah. And we were really buying Michael Price, not Mutual Beacon Fund, as an example. So
blast from the past.
Yeah, right. So we needed to stick with the, those days are over. Like if you're investing that way, I think it's time to move over to the broad-based index investing because that helps you do exactly what you're talking about. If I'm in a broad-based index and my goal hasn't changed, why the hell am I going to change my investment? If this historically has gotten me there, why am I playing this short-term stupidity game?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. I'll tell you what I do like as an offshoot of that. That exactly what you're talking about, OG, is why I really like the yearly milestones, is because when I would tell my client, hey, we had to be up, you know, by this time next year, we had to gain another, I'm going to make up a number, another $8,000. And we were only up another 7,000 between market results and putting money in. Instead of talking about who's president, what's the Fed doing, what the hell's going on with Congress, what's going on with world affairs, we're not talking about any of that. We're talking about what can I do to find that extra $1,000. And once we take it from this court of stuff we can't have anything to do with ourselves, like we can't influence any of that. We can certainly vote, I suppose, but we truly don't have as much influence over that. Is what extra stuff can I do to make up that $1,000 today or in the next 3 months, whatever it is? It puts the power back where it belongs, and that's with you doing the thing to make that, hit that milestone. I really like that focus. And that brings us to the big one, everybody.
Number one.
Yeah, mine really aren't in order, so just to be clear.
He just needs to keep repeating that. I was told there would be no math.
This is the best one, Doug. I'm sure this is the best one.
I was told to make a list of five. You know, I just put diversification. Don't put all your eggs in one basket here for the last piece. And I think that when it comes down to, you know, an investment plan, all of these say the same thing over and over again, which is do the thing that you need to do to reach your goals, to create the life that you want to create. But from a risk management standpoint, there's 500 ways to get there. you know, we talk to people on the show all day long who are successful real estate entrepreneurs, right? They love real estate. They're super great at it. They make bajillions of dollars. We talk to people who are successful business owners and they're really great entrepreneurs and they're very successful. They make bajillions of dollars. We talk to people who are really great investment people and they invest all their money in freaking target date funds. They make tons of money and they're bajillionaires.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, you know, but my point is that there's no right way to do it. But I guarantee if you talk to the person who's a really great, successful entrepreneur, they've got a lot of money in their business, but they've got a lot of money outside of their business. If you talk to the person who's a great real estate entrepreneur, real estate investor, they have a lot of supporting assets outside of that, whether it's cash or other investments. You know, we can do that from an investment portfolio standpoint, because by, to your point, Joe, what you're talking about before, about just buying an index or an asset class fund, you can get that diversification with one, two, or three kind of line items on your statement. You're really owning 8,000 different public companies. And many of us work for big organizations, or we work for organizations that reward us with stock and those sorts of things. And as you look at your net worth and you kind of chart it out, if you've got a lot of money stuck in one idea, whether it's one company or one strategy or one sector of the market or whatever the case may be, I think you're doing yourself a big disservice because that singular idea is not likely to be successful forever. Might be successful now. AI might be successful in 2024, right? Be great. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be successful forever. So be diversified. And like my friend Nick Murray says, it's, you know, your opportunity to trade away the opportunity to ever make a killing in exchange for never getting killed. And that's what diversification is.
It's fabulous.
Never having to say you're sorry. It sounds simple. Like, oh yeah, duh, we're diversified. But you know, I talk to people all the time, like they kind of, everything kind of funnels into one idea, you know,
right,
one strategy or what. It's like all of my portfolio is NASDAQ stock.
Right.
It's like, okay, I get it. You know, it's hot, it's sexy, but it's not always going to be that way. It looks like it always is because that's our recent experience.
Or that second guessing game you're talking about.
Yeah.
You'd see it all the time. People go, are you sure this is right? Are you sure this is? Yeah, this is scientifically proven versus your sandwich you ate for lunch that's telling you that, you know what, maybe we need more mayonnaise in this portfolio. You know, I mean, it's
coleslaw.
Yeah. Right, back off. My number one is also very fundamental, which is how am I going to make adjustments and by how much? And you got this, OG. If I am within what percentage that I was shooting for, am I going to look at making an adjustment? And if I do make an adjustment, how much adjustment am I going to make? Maybe conditions change. Maybe I do want to play that game a little bit in the market. Maybe I want to tweak it. How am I going to tweak it? Do that stuff ahead of time when you're of sound mind so that you don't make that move where it's all NASDAQ or it's all small cap or it's all whatever. We all feel those urges. And by giving yourself those guardrails, you can protect future you from doing something really dumb with your money by specifying. I'm going to look at this twice a year. I'm going to rebalance to get back to the percentages that I wanted each of these to be. And I'm only going to do this if my drift is off by 5% or more, you know, whatever the number might be. That's the type of thing that you're going to put down. There were so many more, OG, that were on this. And by the way, I got to say, the inspiration for this came from a piece in Kiplinger, which is by our friend. He's been on the show a few times.
Didn't tell me that it was already written somewhere.
Eric Roberge, the CFP, wrote a piece in Kiplinger that I liked a lot. You know what he included that we didn't include either one of us was he talked about tax planning a little bit. I'll include his list of five as well. That's a bonus for everybody. But don't get me wrong, Eric. I think that OGs of mine were better than yours. But
he's the one that wrote it down in a magazine. We're just talking about it on the radio.
That's
he
right.
Would disagree with you.
Yeah, Eric is an awesome dude and glad he was able to inspire me to say, you know what, let's see OG's take on this. And I think you knocked it out of the park, my friend. Nice job.
No, you too.
Today, we're going to skip the lifeline because I'm looking at the time and instead we're going to roll into the back porch. Back porch is a segment of the show, the final segment of the show, which always starts with our community calendar. And Doug, what do we got on tap, my friend?
Well, first thing, I've got a great review that I just can't wait to share with everybody. But before that, I want to make sure to remind everybody to follow us on Instagram. We always have a great slate of guests and topics we cover on Instagram Live. at least once a week, sometimes a couple of times a week. So make sure you go follow us on Instagram. But let me get to this review, because there's some, it's a long review, but it's just gold. And I'm going to just take some snippets from it.
Oh, boy.
The title of it is "Not Sure What Kind of Show They Run Here," but it's a
good
one. We've
wondered that for 14 years. What kind of show we run?
This is from somebody called, I think it's Level 2 EV. So let's say Level 2 EV. I've been coming down to the Stacking Benjamins basement for, man, about the last 5 years. And oh boy, what a ride it's been. I got to say, this show is like a fine wine. It continues to get better with age, or at least that's what Joe keeps telling himself. Now, this is fantastic. Now, let me get to the good part.
Skip Neighbor all the OG Doug. Stuff. We're going to skip all the,
I would love to, except there's nothing to skip, sadly. Oh. Sorry, OG. Take that up with your therapist, OG. So now, let me get to the good part. Neighbor Doug, the saving grace of the podcast. Without your witty quips and insightful commentary, I might as well be listening to a recording of my grandma gardening.
Wow.
Thanks to Doug and his trivia, I've got a reason to stick around. Now there's a couple of, I'll fast forward
Grandma, wait a minute. Let's talk about grandma gardening. Cause OG, that could be thrilling. We're not going to doubt that we're like grandma gardening, but we will say that that could be just amazing.
It's so soothing and relaxing. Just the sounds of nature,
just imagine.
The little light click, click, tink, tink of the tools.
Everybody needs a podcast to fall asleep to.
So I'll move on here a little bit later. Level 2 EV says, the sheer absurdity and randomness of the show are a guilty pleasure I can't resist. So thank you, Stacky Benjamin's gang. Absurdity and randomness. Thank you.
We don't want them in any of our like 16 planning meetings to create the randomness.
I know. This is the most choreographed randomness anywhere in media right now. So thank you, Stacking Benjamin's gang, for teaching me, well, whatever it is you've been teaching me. All that being said, Stacking Benjamin's is a breath of fresh air in the finance media space. It's informative, up-to-date, well-produced, and most of all, fun to listen to. Wow. Joe's an incredible knack for opening up guests and providing some of the best exploratory and directive commentary I've seen for almost any show, and puts in the time to research and provide the most to his audience. Let's not forget how handsome and intelligent Doug is.
I don't think that's in a review, OG. I
might have just added that one in. But I'm reading between the lines. I have a special ability to sort of suss out subtext. But no, that's all of that's legit except that last sentence. That's a great review.
If you want to get OG to play along, reviewer, you gotta mention him. You have to mention him.
Well, there's one brief mention about OG's steak dinner.
It's a lot of
that's in there.
A lot of content there.
That's it. Thank you, Level 2 EV. And please, everybody, give us some more reviews. We'll probably give you some stuff. This team at Stacking Benjamins love giving stuff away to everybody but one person. So you got a shot. Just give us a review.
Doug, since OG was not in that review, let's do something that I think OG is going to really like. This was as I was out scouring for TikTok minutes, I found this, and this is it's a small aircraft. I think it's a Cessna. I don't know. OG will probably know. In fact, I don't know if they identify, but I do know it's a small aircraft, and it's between the air traffic controllers. There's a conversation between the air traffic controllers and the aircraft.
5509, flying 200.
Heading 200, Blue 5509.
Blue 5509, traffic 12 o'clock, opposite direction, 10 miles. A F-35 at 4,000 feet northbound.
All right, Nick.
We're going to stop it right there. F-35 coming over him.
That's like a billion-dollar plane.
Right. We're about to have a fighter jet coming over him. Anyway, let's listen.
Negative contact, Blue 5509.
Blue Streak, 5509er, just heads up that traffic passing below your flight of 6 F-35s, all at 4,000.
Six of them.
5509, traffic's in sight, too close for missile, switch to gun.
Hey, that might be the funniest thing I've ever heard in my entire life, man.
Dude, it is Cessna. Too close for missiles.
It's pretty funny.
And I like how ATC, they have no, like, they never break their voice.
Never. Ever.
I mean, that guy could have been laughing like crazy, but that's the funniest thing I have ever heard.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for brightening my day.
You can see him at the holidays. Oh, I love the watch. It's a great watch. Well, if you're not here to hear about air traffic control or to get OG going, like he clearly is now, Doug.
Yeah, what the hell? We put this whole segment in just for you, and we're just getting Mount Rushmore stone face over
what
here.
What else do you want me to say? Like, it was
just
cool.
Nothing.
Something pilot-y.
If you're not here for that, you're here because you want to make better financial decisions and put a stone cold killer in your corner, apparently.
Nice.
SecondBenjamins.com/OG will get you the most equanimity ever in a meeting that you've had. Head to SecondBenjamins.com/OG. And you know what? You can make better decisions in the future for your financial plan than you did in the past. He and his team will share with you how they can interface with you to make that happen. All right. That's going to do it for today, I think. So that was, what was the word they used, Doug? Chaos or what?
Yeah, it was absurdity and
choreography.
Randomness.
Randomness?
Yes.
Yeah, that was random.
The sheer absurdity and randomness of the show.
We didn't see that coming. I thought we were going to get more there, but apparently not. So, Doug, what should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, first, take some advice from our headline. Sure, emergency funds don't earn much money, but the next time you suffer a catastrophic financial event, you'll be glad you have it. Start funneling some money into that rainy day fund today. Second, take some advice from our top five. Working your investments is always better when you think about what you're trying to achieve for yourself rather than responding to world or current events. But the big lesson? Turns out Martha Washington was quite the badass. She was an early settler, and among all of her amazing qualities like running an estate and managing the family financial picture, she was George Washington's sister.
Are you kidding? She was married to him. It was George Washington's wife.
Oh God, that's disgusting. That's just wrong. Well, you know, they probably didn't have laws about that back then.
Dude, how about cracking a book once in a while?
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2024, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. Karen and Joe get help from a few of our neighborhood friends. You'll find out about our awesome team at StackingBenjamins.com, along with the show notes and how you can find us on YouTube and all the usual social media spots. Come say hello. Oh yeah, and before I go, not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show.